Welcome to the APA Podcast, where we help one another follow Jesus at home, in our city, and around the world.
Awesome. Hey, my name's Dave. Welcome. Happy Resurrection Sunday to you. I'm also the guy standing between you and pie, so I'm sorry about that. I'm like the final boss, right? And then pie at the end. But I'm so excited to share the message of the resurrection with you today. I want to help you have a revelation of Jesus, the risen King. Jesus, the risen King. A few weeks ago, Rebecca and I were at a wedding, and I was the officiant, and when I'm the officiant, I don't always know a lot of people other than the bridal party, but we knew a couple people, but I saw someone there who I hadn't seen in probably a decade. And so we connected, you know, he and I grew up in the same city, went to different churches, but saw each other at lots of different events, had lots of mutual friends. And so we chatted for a bit and caught up. And it's always interesting catching up with someone you haven't seen or heard from in a long time. You know, we were both grown-ups with jobs and families, and his hair had gone gray and my hair had gone, you know, we're just a lot had changed. And, but you know, it's always interesting. You see someone, and there's people we keep in touch with that we don't live near anymore, old friends we maybe not see as much. Some people you never talk to, but you can at least, like, creep them on social media and keep up with what they're doing. But other people just disappear off the face of the earth, and maybe you see them 5, 10, 20 years down the road, and you ignore them, or you actually want to actually talk to them and catch up. But there's some people maybe in your life that you kind of go, ah, what happened to so-and-so? I wonder where he is. I wonder what she is up to these days. And the question I have for us today is, where's Jesus right now? If you saw Jesus right now, what would he look like? Because most of us, the image we have in our brain is correct, but it's only the image of Jesus in the Gospels as the wandering, traveling rabbi with no place to lay his head. And we have the image of him dying on the cross for our sins, and even the image of Jesus risen from the dead in those few weeks before he ascended to heaven. But there's another image of Jesus we find in the Scriptures that I think is important to add to that sequence of images. It's as Jesus is today. So what would Jesus look like if you saw him as he is today? Philippians 2 tells us that he was elevated to the highest place of honor in the heavens, given the name that is above every other name. He was glorified out of his resurrected state. So what does he look like now? Join me in Revelation chapter 1. It's the start of John's revelation, and here we get a powerful description of the risen King as he is today, peeling back the veil to see him now in power and glory. Revelation 1, starting in verse 9. I, John, am your brother and your partner in suffering in God's kingdom and in the patient endurance to which Jesus calls us. I was exiled to the island of Patmos for preaching the word of God and for my testimony about Jesus. It was the Lord's day, and I was worshiping in the Spirit. Suddenly, I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet blast. Pausing here for a minute, John gives us a little bit of context for the scene we are about to witness. He was exiled to a prison colony on an island called Patmos, and the reason was because he refused to stop declaring that Jesus had risen from the dead, that he was the risen King. He was sent to this island probably to do hard labor until he died. This was about the early 90s AD, and the emperor of Rome at the time was a guy named Domitian. Now, Domitian may have been a little bit insecure because he had sent out an order to say that everyone in the Roman Empire had to not only revere him and respect him as king, but they had to worship him as God. And so everybody was required to make a regular confession of faith in the lordship of Domitian as God. So they would have to go to a special place of honor, and they'd have to go up and they'd have to take a pinch of incense and throw it in the fire, and they'd have to declare Caesar Kurios, which means Caesar is Lord. It was more than just a sign of respect for authorities. It was an act of worship. Rome generally didn't care how many and which gods you worshipped, as long as you also worshipped the emperor as God. They saw emperor worship as the glue that held the empire together. So you'd have to go and say, Caesar is Lord. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the Bible's teachings on this, like, Christians couldn't do this. You know, in the first century, they were unwilling, they were unable to do this. Like, I mean, Josh in here, it would have been the same as, you know, having to go and say, Caesar is the goat, right? But as Josh told us, Jesus is the goat. They can't both be the goat. There's only one goat. And so you can't go and say both Caesar is Lord and Jesus is Lord. They couldn't hold that with integrity and still be loyal to Jesus. If you're unfamiliar with what the scriptures say, the Bible does teach that Christians should honor their leaders, even if we don't like them. It does teach that we should pray for our government. It even teaches that we should pay our taxes. But it teaches very clearly that there is only one that we can worship. God is the one God that we worship. God incarnate, Jesus Christ, is our Lord. We declare him to be Lord, and there is no other Lord above him. So John refused to worship Caesar, and he was encouraging others to follow in his example to declare Jesus as the risen King and Lord of all. And so John's on this island, he's doing hard labor, yet he experiences these sequence of visions that he writes down and passes on to the church. It's a challenging book if you've read it. How many people have heard or read some weird things in the book of Revelation? If you don't raise your hand, you're lying. It's a challenging book to read. Dragons and beasts and bowls of wrath. It's a lot to digest. And many preachers and evangelists have made a reputation of over-sensationalizing some of these images and even creating fear among God's people based on this sequence of visions that John saw. But I want to tell you, actually, the opposite should be true for us as you read the scriptures. It shouldn't be fear, but faith and greater loyalty and confidence in Jesus that we should experience as we get this revelation of Jesus Christ. G.K. Chesterton said, though John saw many strange monsters in his vision, he saw no creature so wild as one of his own commentators. It's we who have overcomplicated the visions in this book and have made them weird. The truth is, while there are wild things in here, the main message is a lot simpler and a lot less scary for those who call Jesus Lord. The book is not designed to get us riled up about the future. The book is designed to give us a vision of Jesus that empowers and strengthens us to be loyal to him no matter what the future holds. The title of the book is translated as Revelation. The original title is The Apocalypse of Jesus Christ. Unfortunately, in modern terminology, the word apocalypse has come to mean the end of the world. And so it makes things even worse as people think about the apocalypse of Jesus Christ. But the word apocalypse does not have anything to do with the end of the world, and neither does the book of Revelation. Not the end of the world, the renewal of all things. The word apocalypse actually means to unveil or to reveal something that is hidden. So when you open your fridge this morning, that was the apocalypse of the expired milk. Oh no, we need milk. Right? When you open an envelope, it's the apocalypse of whatever letter is inside of there. When you first looked in the mirror this morning, it was the apocalypse of bedhead for some of us. When something is revealed that was once hidden or unseen, that is what an apocalypse is. So what we know is that there is a physical world that our physical senses can interact with, but we believe that beyond that veil is a spiritual reality, the reality of the heavens, and there are things going on that remain hidden and unseen even now. And Jesus is present with us, yet invisible. But if we could peel back the curtain of our reality, we would have an apocalypse of the hidden realities of heaven. And that's the blessing that John had and has passed on to the church. So Revelation isn't designed as a crystal ball to predict the future. While it does give insight on the future, it's designed to reveal the hidden realities of the present to build faith and confidence for Christians today and build our loyalty in Jesus. Bible teacher Daryl Johnson, whenever he talks about the book of Revelation, he repeats this line, things are not always as they seem. For the first believers reading this letter, what did it seem like things were going on? It seemed like Caesar was the ultimate power in the world, and there was nothing anyone could do about it. So the options were either to worship him as God or to be destroyed by him. It seemed like those who were strong were going to overcome those who were weak. It seemed like Jesus was absent and the enemy was winning. It seemed like there was no hope unless you were willing to give your worship and loyalty to the tyranny of the Roman Empire. But things are not always as they seem. And the book of Revelation peels back the curtain so we can get a peek beyond the physical world to see the hidden realities of heaven and the hidden reality of the glorified Lord Jesus who rose from the dead. So what did John see? Starting in verse 12. When I turned to see who was speaking to me, I saw seven gold lampstands, and standing in the middle of the lampstands was someone like the Son of Man. He was wearing a long robe and a gold sash across his chest. His head and his hair were like white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like flames of fire. His feet were like polished bronze refined in a furnace, and his voice thundered like mighty ocean waves. He held seven stars in his right hand, and a sharp two-edged sword came from his mouth. And his face was like the sun in all its brilliance. When I saw him, I fell at his feet as if I were dead. But he laid his right hand on me and said, "Don't be afraid. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I died, but look, I am alive forever and ever. And I hold the keys of death and the grave." This is the apocalypse of Jesus Christ, a revelation of what's going on behind the scenes. John sees a lot of things. We're not going to have time to go through all of them, but one of the things he sees at the beginning is seven golden lampstands. We learn later that these lampstands represent the church, God's people, those who are loyal followers of Jesus. And standing in the middle of those seven golden lampstands, John sees one like the Son of Man. If you've read the Gospels and you read Jesus' teachings, when he refers to himself, the most common title he gives himself is the Son of Man. And this is a reference back to another apocalyptic vision from the book of Daniel in the Old Testament, where Daniel says this, "I saw someone like a Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient One and was led into his presence. He was given authority, honor, and sovereignty over all the nations of the world, so that people of every race and nation and language would obey him. His rule is eternal. It will never end. His kingdom will never be destroyed." So this one who was given all authority and all power and reign and rule over every nation, this is who John saw in the middle of the church. And this is the first revelation we see in this passage, that the risen King is with us. The risen King is with us. He's hanging out among the golden lampstands. He died on the cross. He rose again. He ascended to heaven. But that doesn't mean he's far away. Contrary to popular misunderstanding, Jesus didn't ascend to heaven like a man ascends into the attic. He didn't ascend to a far-off distant place like an astronaut ascends to the moon. Jesus ascended like a king ascends to a throne. That doesn't make the king further away. The king is not distant. The king is still close, yet clothed in new power and authority. The ascension of a king doesn't imply distance. It implies a new status, a greater authority, a power that is different than before, an ability to serve and administer and bless and provide justice for his people that he didn't have before. The revelation of the risen king is that he, in power and authority, is with us now, reigning over a kingdom now that will never end because he's a king who can never die again. You know, it often seems like Jesus isn't close. It seems like he's far away. It seems like he doesn't even know what's going on and doesn't care. I can't see him. I can't feel him. I can't hear his voice, so he must not be close. Whereas Caesar is close. Caesar seems to be breathing down my neck. He's powerful. He's threatening. He's right here. That was the reality for first century Christians. They had to make a choice. Will I remain loyal to the risen king even though he seems far away? Or will I give my loyalty over to Caesar, who's right here in front of me? And we still face that tension today. Christians often forget that we worship and serve the very present risen king, that Jesus is always closer than we think, that he is currently ruling and reigning. When we forget that, we're often tempted to shift our loyalties away from him onto that which is seen. We elevate flawed and broken human leaders and put all of our hope and our emphasis and our strength into them, believing that they can save us. And then we get really scared when someone who we don't want to have power gets power. We think it's the end of the world. But we need a revelation. We need an apocalypse that the risen king is alive and well, that he's currently ruling and reigning over all creation. No matter what Caesar is on an earthly throne, even he is subject to the risen king. But maybe the power of Caesar represents something else for you right now. The power of Caesar represents all sorts of worldly powers that threaten and try to take control of our lives. It can be something like a broken relationship, a scary diagnosis, the loss of someone you love, or worry over wayward grandkids or children. Or you're just doing the math and the income is just not lining up with the expenses. All of these are powers over our life that try to claim lordship over us. And we need a revelation of the risen king. We need to be reminded of his great power in this universe, unseen but just as real. He is with us right now. He is with you. Let's look at another revelation in this passage. There's so much to the description of Jesus, his clothing, his fiery eyes, his bronze feet. All of these represent his nature as God and his power over all things. But look at verse 16, which says, he held seven stars in his right hand. This leads to revelation number two. The risen king is in control. Later in the passage, we learn that the seven stars represent angelic messengers that were sent to the churches in Asia Minor to bring the letter of John to the churches. And all through the Bible, stars represent powerful heavenly beings. But they're not so powerful that the risen king doesn't have them firmly in the grip of his hand. In addition to these heavenly beings, for the first century readers, these stars would have represented concepts taught by the pagan astrologers of the day. At the time, it was believed that there were seven planets in our solar system and that the movement of these planets controlled our fates, not much unlike horoscope stuff today. They taught you don't have control over your life, the planets do. These heavenly beings control your life, and there's nothing you can really do about it. But the revelation of the risen king is that the stars don't dictate your fate. The whole cosmos is in the grip of the risen king. As vast and as big and as powerful as the cosmos seem, they are in the hands of our Lord. Things are not as they seem. Colossians 1, verse 17 says, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He holds it all in the palm of his right hand. Life might seem out of control. You might feel like a leaf caught in a hurricane. Hasn't that been the case? I mean, for at least the last 5 years, as a pandemic came through and inflation and political turmoil and all kinds of things, any sense of control we had pre-2020 doesn't seem to have come back. And the world has felt this angst, this stress, being out of control, not knowing what to do. But regardless of what may seem in the world around us, what it may seem like in politics or the economy or inflation or whatever challenges plague you or I, things are not as they seem. The revelation of the risen king tells us that there is one who is in control. There is one who holds this all in his hand. He is overseeing the events of history. He is orchestrating a plan to bring all things to an end, which is good for those who put their trust in him. The risen king is in control. Let's read the end of the passage one more time as we look at the third and final revelation. Verse 17, John says, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as if I were dead. But he laid his right hand on me, the same hand that held the seven stars,
and said, "Don't be afraid. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I died, but look, I am alive forever and ever, and I hold the keys of death and the grave." Revelation number 3 is that we do not need to be afraid. We do not need to be afraid. I've said this before in this church, so if you're a regular here, you might know the answer to this question. But do you know what the most common command in the entire Bible is? The most common command in the entire Bible is not, do not sin. The most common command is not even, love one another. The most common command in the entire Bible is, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. The Christians of the first century were struggling with fear, and many do today as well. They were literally afraid for their lives. Persecution was ramping up. If they refused to worship Caesar, they could go to prison or worse. Even today, there's plenty of things on the list that we might be afraid of, from the fear of spiders and loud noises to the fear of pain or death or loss. There are plenty of options. But over 100 times in the Bible, people are told, do not be afraid. It's normally paired with statements about God's presence, like Isaiah 41:10, which says, do not be afraid, for I am with you. Or statements about God's power, do not be afraid, stand firm, the Lord will fight for you, Exodus 14. Or statements about God's many promises that will be fulfilled as we trust in him. God knows that our natural response to suffering or the unknown or uncontrollable situations, we respond in fear. So his invitation is to trust him. He's not saying do not feel fear, because feeling fearful is inevitable. The invitation is to refuse to live in fear, to refuse to make decisions based on fear, to refuse to give up or give in on the basis of fear. We don't need to be afraid because the risen King is with us and he's in control. He says, I am the living one. I died, but look, I'm alive forever and ever, and I hold the keys of death and the grave. If you think about it, all fear is rooted in the base fear of death. Any worry about losing something is worry that that thing is going to die. Any worry about life being out of control, any worry about pain or suffering is rooted in the base fear of something that might die and be lost. But Jesus, the risen King, is the conqueror of death. Unlike anyone who can make any similar claim, nobody can. Jesus went into the grave but burst through the other side, and the grave no longer has any power. And while he was there, he stole the keys, which means he's able to save those of us who fear the result of death. Hebrews 2:15 says he set free all who have lived their lives as slaves to the fear of dying. When you worship the risen King, you don't even need to fear death. The clock is ticking. Death is coming, threatening to destroy everything, but Jesus stole its power. Interestingly, though, what John seems to be afraid of in this passage wasn't death or spiders or even Caesar. It was actually the vision of Jesus himself. He says, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. It was like John saw a bear and knew he was toast, so he played dead, hoping to survive. But John has never seen anyone with more power and glory and might than the risen King. And that's why we don't need to be afraid. Because compared to the risen King, the Caesars are mice. Compared to the risen King, no power or authority or sickness or situation holds any power over us. And the risen King is with us. He's with us. It's those who are against the risen King that need to be afraid. It's the Caesars and the dark powers of the world that need to be afraid, because the King has risen and all authority has been given to him. There's a popular kids' book that my kids liked when they were little called The Gruffalo. You can see one of the illustrations on screen. Anybody read these to their kids? Anybody? It's a great story. It's the story of this little mouse. You can see the mouse on your left there. And he's getting harassed by predators as he goes through a walk through the woods. And the snakes and the owls and the other beastly creatures, they want to eat him for lunch, and so they're threatening him. And so the mouse makes up a story. He tells them that he's on his way to meet a Gruffalo, and that this Gruffalo is so big and scary, and he has a particular taste for snakes and owls and other predators. And so this story scares the predators away, and they leave the mouse alone. But you know that over time, you know, this story won't hold up, and eventually one of these predators will be hungry enough and brave enough to go at this little mouse and end his life. But one day, the mouse, to his own surprise, meets a real-life Gruffalo. And here's the scene. Oh, keep that up there for a second, if you please. The creature of his imagination turned out to be real. He sees the Gruffalo and he says this, "But who is this creature with terrible claws and terrible teeth in his terrible jaws? He has knobbly knees and turned out toes and a poisonous wart at the end of his nose. His eyes are orange, his tongue is black, he has purple prickles all over his back. Oh, help, oh no, it's a Gruffalo." It kind of sounds like the scene from Revelation 1. John sees Jesus. "Help, oh no, it's the risen king." But in this story, the mouse learns that the Gruffalo can actually be an ally. And he takes the Gruffalo on a walk through the woods. And when the predators who before had threatened him saw the Gruffalo, they run and hide and never threaten the mouse again. Of course, if you read the book, the analogy breaks down. The mouse has to trick the Gruffalo as well. But here's the point. The scariest creature in the woods is walking with us. The scariest creature in the woods is standing in the middle, present with his church, present with those who are loyal to him. And while there are plenty of scary creatures and beasts in this world that threaten to consume and control, they're all terrified of the risen king. When you walk through the woods with a Gruffalo at your back, there's nothing to fear. But when you walk through this world and even toward death alongside the risen king, you have nothing to fear. Death itself runs and hides. Jesus, the risen king, the one you wished existed, turns out he actually does. Turns out he really is alive. Turns out when you peek beyond the veil and have an apocalypse of him, he is there. He is worthy. He has all authority, and he is ruling and reigning even now. He is the risen king. So in the midst of intense persecution and suffering for first century Christians in Rome, what did Jesus provide the churches to help them endure and overcome? Was it a new strategy to combat the tactics of Rome? Was it marching orders for an empire-wide protest campaign? Did he give them a social media post to like and share? That'll show them. Did he tell them which party to vote for in the upcoming election? Because surely they'll fix everything. He didn't give them any of those things. In troubling times, Jesus gave his church a revelation. He gave his church a vision of what's going on behind the scenes, a vision of the risen king in glory and honor and authority, ruling and reigning now, to encourage us, to empower us, to strengthen us, to keep our loyalty solely fixed on him, because he is working out the course of history toward the ends he has in mind, and the ends he has in mind for those who put their trust in him are good, no matter what we face now, we're in the future. He's the risen king. He's with us. He's in control, and we do not need to be afraid. So today, you're invited. You're invited to put your faith in the risen king, to give your loyalty to him, to begin walking with him through all the trials and troubles of life. Even as we walk toward death, he will walk with us, so we do not need to be afraid. That is the good news of the resurrection of Jesus.
Thank you for listening to the APA podcast. We hope it helps you better follow Jesus in your home, city, and around the world.